Hello, this is your volunteer broadcaster, Steve Knipe, bringing you today's Arizona Daily Sun. Some of the articles I'll be reading today include, from page one, trial date set for story in 2028, city-county ratify results of primary, July rainfall brings Flagstaff above normal. Today's date is August the 4th. Now, on with the stories. Our first story is trial date set for suspect in Flagstaff helicopter crash case. This story is by Sam McLaughlin, a Sun staff reporter. The man accused of causing the deaths of two Arizona Department of Public Safety, known as DPS, personnel whose helicopter crashed while assisting in his arrest will stand trial in Flagstaff, but not until January of 2028. Terrell Story, 50, faces 60 criminal charges for his actions on the night of February 4, 2026, when he allegedly fired a rifle in the direction of Flagstaff police officers and instigated a two-hour standoff. At the end of the confrontation, the DPS helicopter providing overhead observation suddenly crashed into the ground just north of Story's neighborhood, killing pilot Robert Skanky and trooper paramedic Hunter Bennett. Under a legal framework known as felony murder, Story is accused of causing the death of those two individuals in the course of committing another crime. There will be no plea negotiation, Deputy County Attorney Jonathan Moser said again, as he told the Coconino County Superior Court judge on Thursday, July 30th. That is typical for prosecutors in this county, at least, in cases involving a charge of first-degree murder. Unfortunately, I believe defense counsel is correct in maintaining that they need to be able to wait for the NTSB, that's the National Transportation Safety Board, report, Moser continued. The NTSB released a preliminary report on the helicopter crash in March, which did not identify any specific cause of the incident. A final report is still pending. Coconino County Public Defender Jennifer Stock, representing Story, previously told the court she does not believe a trial can begin until after the final report is released and reiterated that position on Thursday. The preliminary report found no evidence of ballistic punctures on the aircraft's records, and Moser wrote in a prior court filing that prosecutors do not believe Story shot the helicopter out of the sky. The final report's conclusion about the immediate cause of the crash, whatever they turn out to be, are likely to be central to the legal dispute over whether or not Story caused the death of the crew. On Thursday, Moser said the NTSB has not been able to provide a specific date for the final report's release, which is typical for the agency, but that he does not realistically expect it before August of 2027. The schedule of proceedings agreed upon by the parties is predicted on the report arriving around that time. Stock affirmed that her client is continuing to waive his right to a speedy trial. Story's trial is currently set to begin on the 20th of January, 2028, and would continue for 19 non-consecutive trial days. That would take it through March the 3rd of 2028. Unless there are any unanticipated developments, Story's next court appearance will not be for another 6 months. Until then, he remains in custody in the Coconino County Detention Facility with his bond set at $5 million. And now on to our second story. City-County ratify results of primary. This is by Sam McLaughlin, a Sun staff reporter. Members of the Flagstaff City Council and the Coconino County Board of Supervisors took a respite from their summer break on Friday to formally certify the results of the primary election that was held 10 days prior. The county election results will be transmitted to the Arizona Secretary of State for inclusion in the statewide canvass this week. In total, there were 25,246 ballots cast in Coconino County out of a potential 86,421, which gave a final turnout rate of 29.02%, which is lower than the past three midterm primary elections, but slightly higher than the statewide turnout of 27.43%. Coconino County Recorder Aubrey Sonderegger told the Board of Supervisors that the switch to an earlier primary date this year may have affected turnout. Sonderegger and Elections Director Elsler Musta provided an extensive presentation on the county's preparations for the primary, including outreach efforts and voter registration drives, and on voting patterns countywide. "We do this for the next generation of voters," Musta said, showing a photograph of a child casting a ballot, which he assured the supervisors was only a test ballot during an election center tour. Board Chair Patrice Horstman joked, "We don't want to see that on the front page of the Arizona Daily Sun." 80% of Coconino County voters, or 20,278, voted early this year. Of the 4,911 ballots that were cast on the day of the election, more than half, 2,510, were cast by voters on the Navajo Nation. There were 15,343 ballots cast by registered Democrats and 9,095 by registered Republicans in this primary. The remainder came from members of the Libertarian, Green, and No Label parties or other nonpartisan ballots. There were 94 ballots cast by eligible voters currently living overseas, including members of the armed forces. Those came from pretty much every continent in the world, Sonderegger noted. Some results of note: former Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez, a Democrat, will once again challenge incumbent U.S. Representative Eli Crane, a Republican, for the Arizona 2 congressional seat in November's general election. Both ran unopposed in their respective primaries. Andy Biggs handily won the Republican primary for Arizona governor, with 71% of the votes in Coconino County and 74% statewide, and will hope to unseat incumbent Katie Hobbs. Jamasita Peshlikai won the Democratic primary for Arizona State Senate District 6 and will face Republican Lloyd Johnson in the competition to replace current state Senator Teresa Hathaway, Democrat, who is not running for re-election. Michael Mike Montiel ran unopposed in the Democratic primary for Arizona State Senate District 7, setting up a challenge with the incumbent Wendy Rogers, a Republican, in November. Bill Diak, Brian Fultz, and Carrie Lynn Cartier-Mode won the election for the mayorships of Page, Sedona, and Williams, respectively. For those municipalities, a candidate who wins an outright majority of votes in the primary election will be declared elected without running in the general election. Sedona's Proposition 403, prohibiting residential development of the Cultural Park property on the city's western edge, passed with 61% of the voters in favor. The supervisors, who were all present in person for the special meeting on Friday morning, thanked the county's election team for their hard work and transparency. The Flagstaff City Council only had a single race to canvass and the first council primary since 2014, which narrowed the field from 7 to 6 candidates. 3 out of the 6 council seats are up for election this year. The 7th council seat is held by the mayor, who is the incumbent, Becky Daggett, and is running for her 3rd term. She is unopposed on the ballot for the 2nd consecutive time. In total, there were 10,035 ballots cast in the council primary out of 37,876 registered voters in the city for a turnout rate of 26,049. The final vote counts were, in descending order, Patty Hansen, 4,883, or 19.73%, Kara House, 4,125, or 16.66%, Austin Asian, 4,012, or 16.21%, Nancy Baca, 3,592, or 14.51%, Lori Matthews, 3,549, or 14.34%, Drew Stanley, 2,322, or 9.38%. C.J. Lucky, 2,182, or 8.82%. The only change to the order of candidates since the initial results were announced was House overtaking Asian for second place. With the tallies now finalized and official, the top six candidates, all but Luck, will move on to the general election to be held on November the 3rd. Lucky conceded defeat after the first batch of results were released. Though the gap between her and Stanley was never enormous, it also held steady as the counting proceeded last week. She told the Daily Sun she had no regrets and she felt confident Flagstaff would be well served by the remaining candidates. House, Asian, and Matthews are all current members of the council and are running for re-election. Hansen, the former county recorder, Baca, an economics professor at Northern Arizona University, and Stanley, a former student organizer, are all seeking a first term on the council. More information about the candidates is available in the Arizona Daily Sun's Candidate Question Series. Asian and Matthews were not present for Friday's special meeting, but the other members of the council, Daggett, Vice Mayor Miranda Sweet, and Councilmember House David Spence and Anthony Garcia attended in person. There were no questions about the resolution adopting the primary results, but House did thank City Clerk Stacy Salzberg for making the process operate smoothly. "It's been wonderful and easy to work with you, Georgiana, and the whole elections team," House said. "You're good at your job, Stacy." "I try," Salzberg replied. The only other agenda item for the special meeting was an authorization for the City Council to proceed as previously directed in executive session with regard to unspecified litigation. The entire meeting included the Pledge of Allegiance, the reading of the Council's mission statement, and land acknowledgement. It took less than 10 minutes, a breeze compared to the Board of Supervisors' one-hour session. Our next story from page one is July rainfall brings Flagstaff above normal. This story is by Cody Bashore, a digital editor. After receiving less than 1.5 inches of precipitation over the previous 4 months, Flagstaff finally enjoyed some form of significant rainfall in July, finishing at 3.63 inches of precipitation as measured at the Flagstaff Pulliam Airport. July landed 1.02 inches above normal and pushed the water year, which starts in October, to a total of 17.3 inches and 1.66 inches above normal. Though the total only ranks 20th all-time for the month of July, it was the most rainfall in the month since 2021's 5.66 inches. A total of 2.69 inches of rain fell from July 16th to the 18th, including a daily record of 1.43 inches, which happened on July 17th, ranking as the sixth highest three-day span in the month's history. Similarly, some of the surrounding areas also finished well above their normal rainfall for July. Belmont received 3.59 inches of rainfall in the month to finish well ahead of its average of 2.66 inches. Sunset Crater National Monument received 3.64 compared to an average of 2.65, and the Grand Canyon's 2.08 surpassed its average of 1.66. Walnut Canyon National Monuments landed well below normal at 1.47 compared to its average of 2.55, and Wapatki National Monument's 1.55 just missed its average of 1.59 inches. Even with the above-average precipitation for the month, Flagstaff is still well behind the average precipitation total for 2026, with 8.12 inches of rain falling from January to July to sit 2.55 inches below normal. Even with the 11 days of measurable precipitation in July, equaling the total since March the 1st, Flagstaff is still in its hottest year in history through 7 months. Though July's 11 high of 92 degrees stands as the highest temperature so far for 2026, the month finished with a high of 83.1 degrees, well behind the recent peaks of 88.9 in 23 and 87.4 in 2024. Meanwhile, the average low temperatures remained high at 53.8 degrees, and the average temperature finished at 68.5. While July's average high only ranked 29th all time for the month, the average low placed 11th and the average tied for the month. For the year, 2026 sits at an average high of 66.1 degrees to still lead 1934's 64.9 as the hottest year in history since 1900. The average temperature of 50.1 degrees remained ahead of 1981's 49.2 degrees, and the average low of 34.6 stayed behind 1981's 35.5 degrees. After a few 90-degree days to start August, a chance of precipitation is in the forecast for the week after 0.04 inches was recorded on Saturday to open the month. As of Monday morning, the National Weather Service office in Belmont forecast a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Wednesday, a 50% chance on Thursday, and a 30% chance on Friday. Temperatures were still expected to be in the high 80s to low 90s through the end of the week, even as the chance of showers and thunderstorms jumps from 30% on Saturday to 60% on Sunday. The National Weather Service Climate Prediction Center continued to expect El Niño conditions to strengthen through the remainder of 26, with a 97% chance the status will persist into early 2027. August outlook for Arizona showed a 40 to 50% chance of leaning toward above average temperatures and a 40 to 50% chance of leaning toward above average precipitation. For the outlook spanning from August 8 through 12, temperatures are at a 60 to 70% chance of being higher than normal, while precipitation is at a 40 to 50% chance of being above normal. A moderate risk, 40 to 60%, of heavy precipitation is in the forecast for August 10th through 14th. Precipitation in August has been sporadic in recent years. 5 Augusts rank in the top 15 for precipitation since 1900. In the past 13 years, compared to the 3 landing outside the top 80, last year's 1.1 inches is listed as 85th since 1900, while 2022's 5.46-inch total is fifth on the list. Our story from page 3 is Hippopotamus Locomotion Might Surprise You. This is by Kieran London, special to the Daily Sun. Defying the expectations of their large size and round shape, hippopotamuses are fast. They can reach speeds of around 30 kilometers an hour in a short sprint, though they trot at roughly 10 kilometers an hour for longer distances. Sure, that's not going to prompt anyone to compare them to the cheetah, but it does make them faster than many animals, including typical humans. People would lose in a race to hippos in the water, too. Hippos spend over half their time in the water, even though they can't swim. They have little fat, but very thick skin and a lot of muscle, making them too dense to float. They run and jump along the river bottom with much of their weight supported by the water. Powerful leaps allow them to move along the bottom of rivers or lakes at 8 kilometers an hour, which is more than enough speed to outrace human swimmers. Many animals change their gait as they increase in speed. Horses are famous for this, as a trot is slower than a canter, which is slower than a gallop. Elephants have a curious movement style in which they never have all 4 feet off the ground, but at high speeds their back legs walk while their front legs run. However, hippos trot, hit the ground at the same time with diagonal legs, no matter what speed they are going, and can make airborne leaps as they run. While some animals bounce a lot at certain speeds and gaits, but become smoother in their movements with greater speed, hippos are always smooth as they run, never exhibiting much vertical movement. Hippos run for multiple reasons. They run to escape predators. Though adults have few enemies, young hippos often flee to the safety of the water to escape lions or hyenas and will head onto land from the water to get away from crocodiles. Going toward invaders of their territory, including lions, boats, and humans, is another reason hippos move so fast. And finally, hippos stay in the water most of the day, unable to avoid being submerged and sunburned if they are on land during the day for long, but they head as much as 10 kilometers away from water each night to feed, mostly on grasses, but also on wild fruits. Though they walk some of the time, they will also trot to and from their feeding locations. At around 2,000 kilograms, hippos are the fifth heaviest land mammal still in existence today, as the white rhinoceros and all three species of elephants outweigh them. That makes their speed across the landscape a bit unexpected. YouTube is full of videos with people watching hippos and expressing surprise about how fast these animals can run. It is deceptive how speedy they can be, as they do not have the body form we associate with running fast. People, too, can be fast with a variety of body types, so the hippopotamuses provide an illustration of the perils of judging speed and athletic ability based on appearance. This story was by Karen B. London, a PhD, who is a certified applied animal behaviorist, a certified professional dog trainer, and an author of 8 books about animals. The next set of stories we have from page through is the Community Almanac. The first day is today, the 4th, and there are no events listed. But for tomorrow, Wiley Riders, August 5th, 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Flagstaff City Coconino County Public Library, 300 West Aspen Avenue. You're invited to join the weekly writing group to practice your writing habit. With the use of prompts, time allotments, and group sharing, Wiley writers will learn more about their writing and support others along the way. constructive and positive feedback is welcome and encouraged. Our ultimate goal is to make writing more accessible and approachable for everyone at any level. You bring your writing tools, and we will bring the fun. On August the 6th, there is free music in the square on Thursdays, 5 to 7 p.m. Get ready to groove all summer long with free live music in the heart of downtown Flagstaff. Discover local musicians. Grab a to-go lunch, coffee, dinner from one of the favorite downtown spots, and groove while you're enjoying a picnic on the square. It's the perfect way to unwind, enjoy good food, and support local talent all season. Also on Thursday, the Fadeaway Sessions featuring Alex Dunn. This is from 7 to 9 p.m. at the High Country Motor Lodge. Fadeaway Sessions is a live music series benefiting environmentally focused nonprofits through 1% for the planet. Roll in, drop the bag, and listen in. Each show features a different musician. Some artists are local and some are taking a detour from the open road. Genres range from indie folk and Americana to cosmic country and beyond. Performances are relaxed, stripped back, and intimate, akin to a living room jam session. Sessions are always free and are always open to the public. See you there, friends. These are the announcements from the Arizona Daily Sun calendar event submission areas, and they are run in print and online and are free of charge. For a full list of events and to submit your own, you're invited to visit the website at azdailysun.com/calendar. Two reminders before we continue. One, you are listening to the Arizona Daily Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona, and I am your volunteer reader, Steve Knipe. Also, a reminder that you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can get our streaming and on-demand services with the new Sun Sounds of Arizona app, which is available for both Apple and Android phones. Check your download store for specifics. And now moving on to page 4. Vitalant holding blood drives across northern Arizona. This is by the Daily Sun staff. Vitalant has announced its northern Arizona blood drive locations for August, including locations in Flagstaff, Belmont, and Williams. Anyone donating blood in August will receive a $15 gift card of their choice by using the code AUGUST15-2026-V when making an appointment. Donors of all types are needed, according to the nonprofit, particularly type O. Every unit of blood is valuable, said Marissa, the mother of a 12-year-old who survived stage 3 lymphoma. We're so incredibly grateful to everyone who chooses to donate. It helped save my son, Andrew's, life. More information about eligibility and ways to make an appointment can be found online at vitalant.org or on the Vitalant app or by calling 877-258-4825. Here are the blood drive locations in northern Arizona this August. By date, in Flagstaff, Tuesday, August the 4th, from noon until 4 p.m. at the Flagstaff Community Legion Center, American Legion Hall on 204 West Birch Avenue. On August the 4th, from 4 p.m. until 7:45 p.m., part of the National Night Out, sponsored by the Northern Arizona Law Enforcement Bushmaster Park. The Bloodmobile will be at the East Parking Lot off of Thomas Drive at 3150 North Alta Vista. On Wednesday, August 5th, from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m., at the Flagstaff Community American Legion again, the American Legion Hall at 204 West Birch Avenue. On Thursday, again at the American Legion Hall on 204 West Birch. This one on the 6th will be from 12 until 4 p.m. On Friday, August 7th, from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m., at the Seaman Family Dentistry, the Bloodmobile will be at 901 North Beaver Street. On Saturday, August 8th, from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m., at Tractor Supply Company in Flagstaff, the Bloodmobile will be there again from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. at 2020 East Route 66. Sunday, August 9th, 11 a.m. until 3 p.m., it will be at the Northern Arizona Warehouse of Vitalant at 345 South River Run Road, Suite 110. On Monday, August 10th, from 9:30 a.m. until 2 p.m., the City of Flagstaff in the Council Chambers and Conference Room at 211 West Aspen Avenue. On August the 11th, Tuesday, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at the Northern Arizona Law Enforcement Saving Arizona, the Bloodmobile at Flagstaff PS/CCSO Complex at 911 East Sawmill Road. On Wednesday, August 12, from 11 a.m. until 3:30 p.m. at the Flagstaff Subaru in the Conference and Break Room, 4910 East Marketplace Drive. On Tuesday, August 18, from 9:30 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Flagstaff Medical Center in the NAH Education Department at 399 South Malpas Lane. On Thursday, August 20, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Bluffs of Flagstaff, the Bloodmobile will be there on site at 3112 East Butler Avenue. On Friday, August 21st, from noon until 5 p.m., they'll be at Aspen Place at the Sawmill, the REI Bloodmobile in the REI parking lot, 323 South Windsor Lane. On Tuesday, August 25th, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Continental Country Club. This is located at 2380 North Oakmont Drive. On Thursday, August 27, from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Coconino National Forest, this will be Fratelli Pizza in the Party Room, 2118 North 4th Street. Friday, August 28th, from 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. at the Trinity Heights United Methodist Church in Celebration Hall at 3600 North 4th Street. On Saturday, August 29th, from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the Woody Mountain Campground, the Bloodmobile will be there at 2727 West Route 66. And now for sites outside of Flagstaff. Joseph City, on Saturday, August the 15th, from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m., at the Joseph City Community. This will be the Bloodmobile at Mr. G's Pizza and Soda Shop at 4526 Main Street. In the town of Williams, on Saturday, August the 22nd, from 9 a.m. until 1 p.m., it will be at the Sherwood Forest Estates at the POA. The Bloodmobile will be in the fire department at 450 South Little John Road. And finally, in Winslow, it will be there on Wednesday, August 26th, from 8 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. at the Winslow High School in the Don Petranovich Gym. This is at 600 East Cherry Street. And now some news briefs from page 4. Child dies in boat accident at Lake Powell. This is by the Daily Sun staff. A child died at Lake Powell after falling from a boat on Thursday, according to the Coconino County Sheriff's Office. Park rangers from Glen Canyon National Recreation Area and deputies from the Sheriff's Office responded to reports that a child fell from a boat's bow and was struck by the vessel. The child was transported to Antelope Marina and subsequently to Page Hospital, but died of their injury. The incident remains under investigation, the Sheriff's Office stated. The Coconino County Medical Examiner will make a formal determination of the cause of death. No additional details were immediately available. Second news brief. NAU Flagstaff are going to conduct active shooter drill on the campus on Friday, again by the Daily Sun staff. Northern Arizona University and the City of Flagstaff will conduct an active shooter preparedness drill on the university's campus this Friday. This is a planned exercise, and there is no threat to the campus or surrounding community. University employees working in the vicinity of Peterson Hall may observe emergency vehicles, responders in tactical gear, realistic role player injuries, and other simulated emergency activities, including the sounds of fake gunfire. The exercise is expected to run between 8 a.m. and noon. Several roads, parking lots, and sidewalks will be closed or will have limited access during the exercise. Included in this closure will be East Franklin Street, McCrary Drive, and the bus transit route through North Campus on Beaver Street. Street parking lots will be closed and sidewalk closure signs will go up on Thursday at noon and will be removed upon completion of the exercise. Participating agencies will include the NAU Police Department and the Flagstaff Police Department, NAU Emergency Management, the City's Emergency Management, the Coconino County Sheriff's Office, the Flagstaff Fire Department, Guardian Medical Transport, and the Arizona Department of Public Safety. Questions concerning the exercise can be directed to the City of Flagstaff Emergency Manager, Daniel Kelly, at daniel.kelly@flagstaffaz.gov. And as usual on page four, we have two pets for adoption. The pets of this week include Misty. Misty is the kind of dog who reminds you just how resilient a loving heart can be. When she was found, she was heartbreakingly underweight after being abandoned by her owners. Despite everything she's been through, Misty still greets people with a wagging tail, a sweet smile, and plenty of affection to share. She's around 5 years old and about 65 pounds. Misty has settled into shelter life with remarkable grace. She's currently living in one of our shelter offices where she's proven to be a wonderful housemate. She's quiet, non-destructive, and content to relax while her people work. She walks beautifully on leash, already knows sit, and is incredibly treat motivated, making her eager to learn even more with her future family. Misty is looking for a home where she can be the only dog. While she can politely pass other dogs on walks, she'd prefer not to share her home with them. At this time, we don't know how she does with cats or children. Come meet Misty at the High Country Humane Butler Campus, located at 3501 East Butler Avenue here in Flagstaff. We're open there on Thursday through Tuesday from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. and closed on Wednesdays. You can see other adoptable pets online at the website highcountryhumane.org. The second pet of the week is Kendrick. You got to meet Kendrick. He is a 2-year-old, 55-pound bundle of love who's ready to become your next adventure buddy. Playful, affectionate, and incredibly smart, Kendrick is happiest when he's out on a walk, exploring a hiking trail, or playing with his favorite little fish toy before curling up beside you for a cozy TV night. Kendrick already knows sit, shake, and even how to catch treats in midair. He's an excellent listener, with the people he trusts, is pretty much potty trained, and continues to make great progress every day. Car rides can still be a little scary for him, but with patience and encouragement, his confidence keeps growing. His previous foster described him as one of the most amazing dogs they've ever had, and it's easy to understand why. Kendrick is goofy, loyal, eager to please, and has so much love to give. He's simply looking for a family to share it with. Kendrick is available for adoption and is looking for a foster home to help him take a break from kennel life. If you can open your home to this wonderful boy, please contact Foster at highcountryhumane.org. He can't wait to meet his forever family. Come meet Kendrick at the High Country Humane main campus, located at 11665 North Highway 89 in Flagstaff. This shelter is open from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m., Thursday through Tuesday, and closed on Wednesdays. You can see all of the adoptable pets, learn more about the programs and services by visiting highcountryhumane.org. Before we move to sports, let me remind you that you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. And now let's move to the sports, starting with Northern Arizona football, the NAU Roundup. Lumberjacks at number 25 in the FCS preseason poll. This story is by the NAU Sports Information Department. The Northern Arizona Lumberjacks football team garnered a preseason top 25 ranking for the second consecutive season, beginning the 2026 campaign ranked number 25 in the Stats Perform FCS preseason top 25. Northern Arizona is nationally ranked for the second consecutive year heading into the season. Prior to last season, the Lumberjacks last earned a spot in the Stats Perform FCS preseason top 25 back in 2016. Reigning FCS national champion Montana State was the unanimous number one team, receiving all 57 first place votes. Montana came in right behind at number two, with UC Davis coming in at number six. NAU is the fourth Big Sky team in the top 25, while Idaho State and Southern Utah also received votes on two or more ballots. NAU, led by head coach Brian Wright, is entering his third season in Flagstaff and has eyes on returning to the FCS playoffs after missing out in 2025. Although the postseason ended the Lumberjacks' season, they still posted their second consecutive winning season with a 7-5 overall record. Of the five other Big Sky teams listed on two or more preseason ballots, NAU will face three of them on the road this season during conference play, with games at Montana State on September 26th, and this will be on ESPN2, Idaho State on October the 3rd, and Southern Utah on October the 31st. The middle of the stretch also includes a home game against Montana on October the 10th. Moving now from football to volleyball. For the 14th time in program history, the Northern Arizona women's volleyball team earned the AVCA Team Academic Award. After first receiving the award in 1993 and again in 2004, the Lumberjacks were able to get the distinction in four consecutive years from 2009 through 2012 before beginning another impressive run in 2018. Since then, NAU has received the honor every year except 2020. The AVCA Team Academic Award has been presented annually since the 1992-93 academic year. A total of 1,432 collegiate and high school volleyball programs earned the 2026 AVCA Team Academic Award by maintaining a year-long team average of at least 3.3 on a 4-point scale or a 4.1 on a 5-point scale. It comes as no surprise to see our sport have more than 1,400 teams earn this Team Academic Award this season, said the AVCA CEO, Jaime Gordon. We are grateful for the dedication of the coaches and players who make both the classroom and on-court success the lifeblood of their programs. In addition to the Team Academic Award, the Lumberjacks were recognized on the Team Honor Roll, which recognizes programs that rank among the top 20% nationally in team GPA. Additionally, 9 student-athletes earned Big Sky Conference All-Academic Honors during the past academic year. Avery Gottschalk, Gigi Greenlee, Kira Hall, Lily Holmes, Ella Hosfeld, Kylie Moran, Hannah Stoddard, Sophia Wadsworth, and Lainey Wilson were those winners. NAU opens its 2026 season on August 29th in Mississippi before returning home to host the annual Lumberjack Classic from September 9 through 12. Contributing to the article were Stacy Isobe and Ashley Croft. The next story is Jonas Kanyenga from NFL Academy to NAU. The Lumberjack defensive lineman comes to the Flagstaff area from the UK. This story is by Brendan Martin, who is a Sun staff editor. American football has come a long way in expanding its reach overseas. The National Football League now brings multiple games to Europe throughout its regular season. College football has also seen a boost from outside the United States, with players seeking ways to get noticed by coaches and further their education. Jonas Kanyenga, one of NAU's newest defensive linemen, worked his way through the NFL Academy in the United Kingdom to earn his way onto a college team. From a young age, Kanyenga felt like American football was a sport in which he could excel. He now looks to show the world that guys outside of the States can play. I'm definitely trying to put one on for the guys back home in the UK, Kanyenga said. I felt like throughout my recruiting process, I was kind of overlooked. I'm definitely trying to prove that guys overseas can play for sure. I feel like some coaches, they see European and they're kind of not interested anymore. Kanyenga got his start playing the game while with the London Warriors, a club team in South London that prioritizes player development. Its youth program was established in 2005 by coaches Tony Allen and Jerry Anderson, each of whom had experience working with the NFL on its endeavors abroad. The love for football in Kanyenga sparked thanks to his family. My older brothers used to play, Kanyenga said. I used to watch NFL games with him. I used to play Madden as well when I was younger. When I was around 16, I decided to pick it up myself and play for a local team. Kanyenga later learned about the NFL Academy, where he honed his skills and caught the eyes of college football recruiters after just 1 year. The NFL Academic Academy is a global initiative put together by the league that aims to educate high school student athletes about football while also providing them with rigorous training. The Academy launched in North London in May of 2019 and has since set up matchups between its students and some of the premier American high school programs. According to the Academy's website, more than 40 of its students have earned scholarships on college football teams. The Academy also expanded to Australia in 2024 and has a foothold in Africa. Kanyenga was rejected by the NFL Academy twice. Before the third time ended up being the charm, he considered leaving his football dreams behind and pursuing other avenues. I kept working, getting stronger and faster, Kanyenga said. I just perfected my technique, working my tail off with different coaches and trying to improve from my previous performances at combines and tryouts. He later earned 6 college offers while at the academy, including one from Sacramento State, Maine, New Hampshire, Bucknell, and New Haven. His first offer from NAU was the one he had circled all along. His conversations with the program's general manager, Tim Roshman, gave him clarity on what to expect and how he should prepare himself. "I stayed in contact with them from the moment I got the offer," Kanyanga said. "On my official visit, I was with him most of the time." A majority of Kanyanga's offers came from schools closer to the Atlantic coast, much closer to his hometown of London, than where he is now in Flagstaff. A big reason for his decision was thanks to conversations he had with Clinton Aslubuki, a former NFU offensive lineman who now plays at Vanderbilt. Azabulki from Lagos, Nigeria, also came from the NFL Academy. Kanyanga had discussions with Ajibuki concerning NAU, which further solidified his choice. "He just told me about NAU," Kanyanga said. "He told me it's a great program. The facilities are really nice. He told me how it was like, the adjustment to collegiate football. The transition from the NFL Academy to college practices is no small feat." Kanyanga said his first week of practice had its ups and downs. He is learning the speed of the game on the fly. "The physicality, the speed, everyone's much stronger, faster," Kanyanga said. "There's less room for error. You need to make sure you're on your A game." Kanyanga has been a fan of the game since he was little. He specifically remembers watching LSU's historic 2019 championship run, led by Heisman Trophy winner Joe Burrow, that opened his eyes to football and got him jazzed to give it a go himself. Kanyanga joined a lineman group seeing a major overhaul this season. Kendall Coleman took over as the team's new defensive line coach this offseason, overseeing a change to a four-man front with dynamic play-calling options. Coleman said he sees a lot of raw potential in the 6'4", 257-pound lineman. "He's definitely done some impressive things," Coleman said. "His size and stature alone is impressive. But when you start to add in the skill level and the talent level that he has the potential to reach, there's high hopes for the future." Coleman joined the staff in large part thanks to a condition he had with the new defensive coordinator, Trenton Green. Coleman played for Green when he was a graduate assistant for the defensive staff at Syracuse. Coleman was a two-time all-conference player with the Orange and was team captain in 2019 before starting his coaching career there as a graduate assistant and then a defensive analyst. All that experience made Kanyanga even more excited to learn from him. "I like him a lot," Kanyanga said. "He's a young coach. He played for multiple years and has even been to an NFL minicamp. He's a great coach, definitely pushes us to the best of our abilities." Coleman said he sees that Kanyanga was well coached in the UK. "He learned about his origins and quickly realized the kind of talent people with Kanyanga's upbringing have. I didn't know much about the NFL Academy before this moment, but I definitely feel more comfortable going back for another guy," Coleman said. Getting Kanyanga in his unit once he arrived at camp has been a major boost for Coleman. He sees Kanyanga as someone who could thrive in this new system. Getting him to learn how to use his physical attributes has been a big part of Coleman's new gig. The biggest thing for Jonas, which is something I've shared with him too, is you get young guys like that who come in a little bit bigger than what they're ready for, Coleman said. They've learned to adapt and use their body, and that's what they must do right now, and that's what we're working on. Kanyanga has hopes to contribute to NAU's quest for a third straight winning season under third-year head coach Brian Wright, who has proven willing to recruit prospects from as far away as the game of football has gone. There are plenty of linemen Kanyanga will be competing with for playing time in the lead-up to the season this fall. Much of the roster and its depth chart will have been determined in the months before NAU's first game. Kanyanga hopes to make an impact right away. I want to grow exponentially as a player, get stronger in the weight room, and get myself ready for collegiate football. It's a big step up from where I was before. If you're looking for something a little different, there is a free lacrosse camp scheduled for August the 16th. This is by the Daily Sun staff. Northern Arizona Youth Lacrosse will host a free beginner's clinic for boys and girls in kindergarten through high school at Sanagua Middle School. It's scheduled for 10 to 11:30 a.m. on Sanagua's practice field. The clinic does not require any previous lacrosse experience, and Northern Arizona Youth Lacrosse will provide all sticks and equipment. According to the announcement, athletes will learn introductory skills for the sport through age-appropriate instruction, drills, and games. The clinic is intended to provide families with a free opportunity to experience lacrosse before deciding if they would like to continue with the sport. Flagstaff has young athletes who love lacrosse, but most families have never had a local, low-risk way to try it, said Shannon Roberts, president of Northern Arizona Youth Lacrosse, in a press release. We're bringing the coaches, sticks, and equipment so kids can learn and see whether or not the sport sticks. Roberts, who was recently named the head coach of the Northern Arizona University Women's Lacrosse Club, will lead the clinic. Information about the Flagstaff Astros Youth Lacrosse Program will also be available, and participation in the clinic does not require a season commitment. Registration for the clinic can be completed at the website nazlax.org. Northern Arizona Lacrosse Youth Program was founded by 12-year-old Molly Whitehead to expand access to lacrosse across Northern Arizona. The nonprofit organization is developing recreational programs in Flagstaff, Prescott, Sedona, and the Verde Valley. Well, unfortunately, that's all we have time for today's Arizona Daily Sun. I'm Steve Knipe, and I invite you to stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds. Thank you for listening.